This is Ahval meeting point of accurate news and free comment on the current affairs of Turkey. Welcome to our podcast series.
Hello, welcome to the Washington Line. Today we are going to talk about post-US elections, Turkish-US relations. My guest today is, once more, Edward Stafford, retired from the U.S. Foreign Service. His most recent overseas assignment was the Counselor for Political and Military Affairs in Ankara. And also, Edward Stafford has been a longtime contributor to Ahval. We just published his newest piece on Blinken, Sullivan, and Erdogan today. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ilhan. How are you doing?
Doing fine. So we had these discussions, I think, a couple times before the elections. Yeah. And, you know, we mostly talk about Biden. That was the expectation. And it took a few days or weeks. And there we are. I think it seems like more real than ever. He is going to take over to administration by the third week of January. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things, there's been all this speculation about what, you know, Trump was going to try to find how to hang on. And the more calm people said, look, he believes there was fraud. He believes there was enough fraud to change the outcome. Let the process play out. It'll go into the courts. The courts will examine the allegations. If there's no evidence, they'll just throw them out, which has been what's happening. And it was always going to be a long shot anyway for him, because he would have had to change the results in three of the states. Now, is it possible that there was so much fraud in one particular state that, you know, maybe 10,000 votes got moved out of 5 million? Sure. But three? So I think there's an indicator. A lot of people may have put too much, but you have to be careful with the decision that came from Trump, not from the head of the General Services Administration, to release funding and office space to the Biden transition team and to start working on the liaison between the Biden transition team and the Trump people who are, you know, still in office until January 20th. That's an indication that he has accepted the reality that on January 20th, he will no longer be president of the United States and Joe Biden will be inaugurated.
Okay, yeah. Then. Let's move to Turkey.
It's done. Now, what's going to happen? Yeah, we can all breathe easier. There's not going to be a coup. There's not going to be anything like that. Yeah. Don't worry. But just to say this, he will not ever, ever concede. He will never use the word. I mean, he will never pick up the phone, call Joe Biden and say, Joe, congratulations. Not going to happen. And who cares, quite frankly? I mean, yeah, I mean, it would be gracious, but we're talking about Donald Trump. So,
yeah, sure.
Right. So let's move on, since now we have closed the door, in effect, on the Trump administration. Let's start looking at the people who Joe Biden has started putting in place. Now, the ones that are, I think, of principal importance for Turkey are the Secretary of State, the National Security Advisor, and the Secretary of the Treasury. And I'll talk about that a little bit. So we have Tony Blinken, Antony Blinken, a longtime aide on foreign policy issues to Joe Biden, going back into the time when, you know, well before the time when Joe Biden was vice president. Blinken has been working alongside Joe Biden as a foreign policy advisor for, well, probably almost 30 years. Time in the Senate, and then when he was a vice president, and he was, for a time, Deputy Secretary of State. So this is, you know, towards the end of the Obama-Biden administration. So this is a good, sound, experienced choice. Okay, Jake Sullivan. Jake Sullivan's a little different. Jake Sullivan is really from the Hillary Clinton wing of the Democratic Party. And Jake is far less of a policy wonk than Tony Blinken. I mean, Tony Blinken is a very deep thinker. Now, I'll hold off judgment on the moment on whether he's gotten things right or wrong, but he thinks deeply about major issues and tries to come up with a solution that works. That's the way he operates. Jake Sullivan is much more of a process guy, which is kind of what you want over at the National Security Council. I mean, his job is to coordinate the National Security Council that brings in people from all the different agencies of the U.S. government, depending on what the topic is. And then they discuss things, they come up with ideas, suggested courses of action.
At this point, let me inject a question. Yeah. Let's talk about a little more on Sullivan and his position. As you stated, he's going to be National Security Advisor, and he won't need Senate confirmation. So he's basically...
He's in.
And can you tell us a little bit of that position? Some call it as the police, traffic police officer who is helping, you know, what is in, what is out. But since we are discussing about Türkşengül, what would be his functioning while, let's say Katsa or another serious issue is coming to the National Security Council table that morning, 10 a.m. People are going to discuss what to do about Turkey. Right. What is Sullivan's his mission, his function?
Right. So Sullivan is to advise the president, but the thing is, really coordinator of generating that advice. So let's take Katsa as an example. Now, there's a number of what we call stakeholders in the U.S. government concerning Katsa. And I'll restrict myself to the executive branch. We'll set aside for a moment Capitol Hill, Congress. So who has an interest in Katsa? Well, obviously the Secretary of State or the Department of State, let's put it that way. The Department of the Treasury, Department of Defense, Department of Energy. And that has to do with any time there is even a hint of an interest of nuclear weapons technology, I'll just say that, Department of Energy is involved. And also because any sort of sanctions on Turkey are probably going to have something to do with the energy resources that Turkey is getting from Russia. So what he does as the traffic cop model, or really probably one of his subordinates, would coordinate a working group, and they're called specifically interagency working groups. And these interagency working groups bring together representatives of the aforementioned four groups, and usually there'll be somebody from CIA there to provide a briefing on what they know about what's going on. And they will discuss a particular topic in that working group. So there will be probably a Katsa working group. It might just last for a couple of months and then it'll disappear. Although, because the ongoing management of the U.S.-Turkey relationship will remain with the State Department. But when some major issue comes up, like what to do about Katsa or what to do about Turkey's involvement in Libya, then you bring together different agencies. And the job of the National Security Council is to coordinate the discussions and come up with suggested courses of action, which then get pushed up first to a group called the Deputies Committee, which is essentially chaired by the Vice President. Although the National Security Advisor is right there. And then they come up with policy recommendations that go to the President. And that's really what ultimately the National Security Advisor is doing. He's coordinating the development of policy plans and suggestions for the president, and then he's presenting them to the president and giving him advice from his own knowledge. So in some ways, Jake Sullivan is the right guy, particularly for that coordination process of coordinating what's coming out of the State Department, Treasury, Defense, or whatever the issue might be. What's going to be interesting is dealing with John Kerry.
Mm-hmm.
Because John Kerry will also not, I don't think he's going to need Senate approval. It depends what title they give him and what his functions are going to be. It's more the more importantly, the functions. So imagine this. He's going to be in charge of everything about dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. Well, we'll just take an example of Turkey. Istanbul has one of the largest airports in the world. It's a major hub. In some ways, the Istanbul airport is actually in the center of the Northern Hemisphere. If you think the far western edge of the Northern Hemisphere is, say, San Francisco or Seattle, and the far eastern edge is Tokyo, Istanbul's right in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the reasons it is a great place to have a transportation hub. Well, during a pandemic, transportation hubs become problematic.
Yeah.
So there's going to have to be coordination, you know, any sort of response, global response, because clearly one of the things that's going to happen under Biden, whether it's Jake Sullivan working the National Security Council on coordinating the plan between all the different agencies of the U.S. government, or it's over Department of State solely, and it's Secretary of State Blinken working with his counterpart in Turkey, there's going to be much more of an emphasis on multilateral cooperation and don't go it alone approach in this administration than we have had for the last 4 years.
So we have been obviously trying to, you know, dig up anything and everything about these new, not new people, they've been around, as you mm-hmm. mentioned, for a long time, but for this administration, new administration, new people, and Turkey, Jack Sullivan's a peace with former U.S. ambassador to Turkey, Eric Edelman, in Politico in 2008, in which they really slammed hard Erdogan. When we talk about those years in 2018, Erdogan was talking about Ottoman slap on U.S. Soldiers, and Manbij was the flashpoint city. And over that issue, basically, Sullivan was saying, you know, just don't treat Erdogan as a spoiled child. Just, you know, he is not too big to fail. And second big, I seen two big writing or interview about him and Turkey. And this one is again, I think, 2018. Yeah. He is giving United States of Institute of Peace a very short interview, like five, I think long interview, but one part of it is about Kurt.
Right.
And he was, I mean, he was very clear what he was saying. He was saying that Turkey needs to sit at the table and do diplomatic talks, quote unquote, with their Kurds in Turkey. Turkey needs to respect autonomy of Syrian Kurds, but he was also adding that Syrian Kurds also be reasonable about their autonomy and about sensitivities of Turkey. And the third one, he was saying Turkey needs to accept that U.S. is going to continue work with YPG, not SDF or any other thing, YPG, and U.S. will continue to support YPG, but also U.S. will try to sever ties between YPG and PKK. Well, these three conditions are kind of a nightmare scenario for Erdogan. He would never, ever want to hear about this. Obviously, Erdogan makes changes, U-turns, that you know, so he can make a U-turn in a couple months. He may. I don't know if he will. But currently, we're talking about these three conditions. None of them, the nationalist coalition in Turkey, would want to hear. And no. So, you know, Kurdish issue is going to be a big issue. It's unresolved and it's continued to be, you know, very problematic for everybody in the region. So Biden team needs to tackle that issue. How do you think the way forward from here?
Well, the first thing is you mentioned the ability of President Erdogan to pivot, to change direction, make a 180-degree turn. Let's go back to 2013. This is the opening to the Kurdish population. Things are going very well, and then there's an election. I mean, you know, everybody's at that time, and think about where Jake Sullivan was. You know, I don't know if he was at a think tank or where he was working on the Hill or something, because I don't think he was quite into. No, by then he would have been. He would have been working in the State Department. If you think about it, there was all this reporting going out of the American embassy in Ankara back to Washington saying it's looking really good. There hasn't been as much fighting this past kind of fighting season because of the weather. There's actually fighting seasons in the Kandil Mountains between the PKK and Turkish forces. And then you had the election of 2015 in which the HDP got, 14%, if I remember correctly. And let's be honest, Erdogan was not happy. Now, some say the PKK caused the breakdown in the ceasefire and the lack of open hostility within Turkey between the government and Kurds in the southeast, or that Erdogan manufactured it. It doesn't matter. What happened was everything broke apart. The problem is that Jake Sullivan, Tony Blinken, and a bunch of other people back in Washington at that time, they thought that there was a pluralist, democratic resolution to the Kurdish problem in Turkey on the horizon, and then suddenly it's gone. Now, who's the easiest person to blame? Öcalan sitting in prison or Erdogan sitting in the presidency? And whether it's a conscious thing or not, I think unconsciously they blame Erdogan for what they thought was going to be a resolution to the Kurdish-Turkish issue. Okay, that's the background. Jake Sullivan's not the one to worry about regarding Kurdish affairs in Turkey.
Mm.
He's mainly an implementer. He's far less a formulator. In other words, he's not really going to be formulating policy. He doesn't have the reputation for that. And many people don't believe that he really has the requisite skills and training and formation and study to be a policy formulator. He's much more of someone who implements the policy and helps to coordinate to produce the policy, but the policy is coming from others. So better to look at Blinken.
Mm-hmm.
But also look at Biden. Biden was the one who suggested that the solution to Iraq was to divide it into three fairly autonomous, though not quite independent, mini nations within the Federation of Iraq. Guess what one of those was? The Kurdish regional government. That would have become, if not independent from a central government in Baghdad, it still would have, still there? It still would have been, okay, he still would have been it would have much greater autonomy than it now has. Biden bought into that. That was his suggestion. So I don't know the full answer to the question, but I do know this. The Kurds definitely have people making foreign policy decisions for the United States from the very top, or they will have soon. Joe Biden, Antony Blinken, and Jake Sullivan, because he can move it, shift it a little bit in this direction, shift it a little bit in that direction, who are very seized of the issue of the Kurds. In particular, they feel that the Kurds were not treated well by the Trump administration, that they were key to stopping ISIS in Iraq, and then also creating some modicum of stability in Syria. So now, how that's actually going to be expressed by Blinken to Çavuşoğlu when they first meet, which, again, if you look at Blinken's writings, he recognizes the importance of Turkey. But he also has some tough words about, we have disagreements about certain things. We can work together on things on which we agree. But Turkey has to want a positive relationship. I mean, that's a pretty tough thing to say. Now, he said that when he was out of government. Once he's in, everybody changes their tune. When they're out there, not part of government, they're less careful with the things they say. They, you know, they're oftentimes addressing an audience for political reasons. They might be talking to a group of constituents who have a particular agenda, and they kind of shade what they're saying over there. But I think, you know, President Erdogan is probably justly concerned about how it's going to be a much more difficult relationship than the one that he has had over the last 4 years.
And we should remind viewers here that, as you suggested, Sullivan talks about the Kurdish issue the way I describe and you build on it. But also, let's remember Mike Pompeo in 2016, on the night of the coup attempt, after we have realized the coup attempt failed, he sent this tweet and describing Turkey and Erdogan as a, I think it was an Islamofascist radical autocracy or dictatorship. So, you know, he was, once he got in the, obviously, the government, and he met with Turkish foreign minister many times. And and until very recently, you know, he was very careful about Turkey and Turkish sensitivities after the election loss. And then, you know, he did not even stop by in Ankara in his most recent visit, and he returned his own self. I think many thought that that's because his potential run for 2022 Senate race or 2024 possible presidential race.
Yeah, Mike Pompeo is not going to go away. He was a darling of the evangelical Christian voters in America, so he's got a base already. As I think I wrote in one piece, or I said to you maybe just in a message, he's never given up on his feeling that Erdogan has taken Turkey down a much more Islamist road. And I'm using Islamist in the way the Jordanian king used it, that is politicized Islam, using Islam to generate political power. And I, you know, So now that the election is over and he's kind of on his own, I think that's why you saw, let's be honest, it was a snub. The notion that he would fly into Istanbul to meet with religious leaders and not have the courtesy to travel out to Ankara to see his counterpart. There's an old saying from Oscar Wilde that a gentleman never insults inadvertently. And Mike Pompeo was essentially insulting Foreign Minister Çavuşoğlu and Erdogan, and he was doing it on purpose. Blinken will never do such a thing, by the way. Returning to Blinken, Blinken and Sullivan are much more of a non-confrontational school. Behind closed doors, it will be very intense at times. But in public, they are always going to have a respectful tone. And what might not work, though, for Erdogan is that they won't show disrespect towards him, but they will call out things like, for example, LGBT human rights and press freedom. And that is, that's going to be a key difference. The question is whether Erdogan will understand that when they are speaking out against some of the practices of the Turkish government, he should not see that as a personal affront to him. He can choose to do so, and my guess is that most of the time he will, and that's going to make the relationship even more difficult.
Clearly we will have a lot to talk once, you know, things get settled. And also we don't know a lot of positions yet. For example, who is going to replace Ambassador Jeffrey? Whether it's going to be Brett McGurk again. Brett McGurk was in his, you know, last months, maybe last 6 months when he was on the job. He was a persona non grata in Ankara. He was not able to go to Ankara. His relationship was that bad. And if he comes back, things are not going to be again good. And I also heard two more people. Okay. That being discussed. One of them is former Ambassador Eric Edelman. He might have some kind of position. He already sent us an email saying that he has no intention to return to government. And, you know, and he also added there are lots of qualified people already. But, you know, these things, he might be some special envoy at some point. We know that he is very, even though he has been coming from Republican traditions with the thing more close to the traditional Biden centrist team. He has written pieces, people like Jack Sullivan, and all that. And I heard also Victoria Nuland might be back as a assistant secretary of state or, you know, some other senior position. But these are all just some rumors going around in Washington. We still don't know who is going to be exactly looking after Europe and, you know, Turkey desk, and who is going to be Turkey a person at the National Security Council in White House, right, and the Defense Department. A lot of still moving parts. But if you want to add anything in this.
I mean, just a couple of things for the audience to understand. What's going to now happen once you've got the top dogs in a sense done? They all have people who they have worked with over the years, and they would like to see put into positions so that they have a reliable loyalist in those more subordinate positions. So, for example, there are people that Jake Sullivan would love to see over at Defense or over at the State Department or over at Treasury. And the same thing will happen at all those cabinet positions. Also in the mix, you have the disappointed progressives who are finding out very quickly that Joe Biden is going to use experienced kind of either career professionals or people who have been part of the Democratic Party establishment. And they're starting to resent that and make noise about it. And so he's going to have to worry about pacifying them with some appointments. I don't think there's any chance of Eric Edelman, for example, serving in the Biden administration. I think there are others who are former career people, and they will be coming back. I mean, I can see Bill Burns. I can see Nick Burns. I can see Toria Nuland absolutely coming back. The problem for all three of them is given how high they had risen in the State Department. Bill Burns was the number two. Nick Burns was the number three. Toria Nuland was the undersecretary for public affairs. Toria was also the ambassador to NATO. So, you know, putting them in, say, for example, as an ambassador to Turkey, as important as Turkey is, and it usually gets, if not a political appointee, a very senior career diplomat. My guess is that Turkey is going to get a very senior career diplomat, foreign service officer, senior foreign service, someone who has 30 years or more experience, and therefore has the gravitas and the weight to arrive in Ankara and immediately have the respect of everybody over at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and at the presidency. He or she will have to deal with it. It's not going to be an amateur, and it's not going to be a political fundraiser because it's too important. I mean, you send the political fundraiser off to Luxembourg where they can count their money, but you don't send them to Ankara. It's too important. And that's true of many places. So I would expect now what's going to happen is that the Biden team and Blinken, including Blinken and Sullivan, they know some of the senior career foreign service officer people who are currently in the State Department or may have resigned over the last 3 or 4 years who would be qualified to go into Turkey. And they'll be passing that information to the White House chief of staff and to, because what's going to happen is the really important ambassadorial appointments are going to be negotiated, whether they're political or whether they're career people, are going to be negotiated between the Secretary of State and the White House Chief of State. I want to talk just really briefly about Yellen.
Treasury Secretary.
Former head of the Federal Reserve Bank. Again, a long-term career professional, definitely from the left side of the political aisle, but what we here would call center-left. She's not extreme left or hard left or anything like that. Has a good working relationship with the current head of the Federal Reserve Bank, Powell. They know each other. They've worked together before. She's not, though, strictly speaking, a political actor. So on the issue of sanctions, because remember, whenever the United States imposes sanctions, they're almost always through the Department of Treasury. They have to do with trade and tariffs and, you know, transfer of funds and all this sort of stuff. It's going to be very interesting to see who becomes her deputy, because historically it is the deputy Secretary of the Treasury who really takes the lead on that kind of sanctions regime. And also the one who, by the way, would attend the meetings at the National Security Council that make a final judgment about the policy. So wait for that one. That one will be quite interesting. And again, that takes us back to this fight going on. It's already becoming pretty open between the progressives, who believe that they are owed an awful lot by the Biden team, and the more kind of center left Democratic establishment, who actually believe the progressives hurt them. And that's why they lost 10, 11, 12 seats in the House of Representatives. So
yeah,
there's going to be some real fighting. But, and again, I'll go back to Blinken. He's well aware of the importance of Turkey. Now, you have to put that into the context that Blinken also understands that the United States might really need to shift some of its attention away from the greater Middle East and Europe and over to East Asia and the Pacific Basin. And while that's happening, the reality is that Turkey, along with the rest of the countries in that region of Europe and the greater Middle East, which are led by Turkey, as the region becomes less important for U.S. policymakers, Turkey's going to go down in importance for U.S. policymakers.
Sure. There are just too many issues. I mean, you know, yeah. Everything I've read about Blinken and the people who know him very closely, they talk about him. They, you know, everybody agrees that he's realist. He knows what Turkey is and how important it is. At the same time, there are just too many serious issues between Turkey and U.S., and we will all see how, what kind of a progress, you know, the Kurdish issue, the huge problem, S-400, Eastern Mediterranean, Syria in general, human rights and, you know, freedom issues, as well as Turkey's relations with the NATO, with the Western civilization, basically, Western blocs and EU, all these huge issues, each of them is really difficult to tackle. And you know, they have to find some kind of solution to go forward without solving these problems. The things will, you know, yeah, well, will not be settled. And I want to add one more thing. You talk about the Secretary of Treasury, and obviously there's a Halkbank issue. There are two faces of Halkbank issue. One of them is South District of New York, which is, you know, within the judicial process. Nothing, I mean, Trump tried to do things, intervene, it didn't work, and Biden will not try. Biden does not have any incentive to try to intervene. So that will go, but the other issue is with the OFAC, which is part of the Treasury. And I think, you know, you can talk to this if you like. I think that there is absolutely full, you know, authority almost for Biden administration to go forward with the big fines, punishments, like they did it to Baribas with $9 billion about a decade ago, I think, or, you know, lower it. I think it will be totally, one issue it appears that Biden administration and team will have real leverage to whether go forward or do it small, and that leverage maybe they can get something. But other issues, it seems that, you know, the sides will have to sit and talk and try to find a solution. If not, then we will see some kind of a collision course in each of those issues.
No, I think the collision course is a real possibility. I would hope that by now, people from the Turkish embassy in Washington are reaching out. Now, it's a little early because, again, we only know two of the principal actors. We don't know the next couple levels down, who would be people that people from the Turkish embassy would interact with. I mean, as you mentioned, we don't know who the Assistant Secretary for European Affairs is.
Sure.
We don't know who the different assistant secretaries and deputy assistant secretaries over at Defense or at Treasury. I mean, there are many positions at Treasury that are assistant secretary positions that are going to be important to Turkey, you know, foreign transactions, sanctions regime. So it's a, you know, until we get those filled in, we just have general outlines. But it's at this point in time where, if they were wise, the Turkish authorities would start thinking about what's going to be our strategic response. Are we going to try to tough it out and you know, operate from almost a position of hostility towards the United States and the new administration? Or are we going to try to meet with them early on, and we'll take note of what Blinken said about there are areas where we are in agreement, and let's work on those as a foundation for a more positive relationship. So at this point in time, I would hope that at the presidency and at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, they're strategizing about what's going to be the best approach with the Biden administration. A confrontational one is not going to be the best approach, by the way. Make that real clear.
Mm-hmm.
They also need to take this into account. Joe Biden and Tony Blinken and many of the other people whose names are being mentioned, they support the EU as a strong institution. And one of the things they're going to be engaged in is getting the European Union to take a much more cohesive and common position. So we all know that in Libya, there is a disagreement between France and Italy about which side to support. One of the first things that Biden and Blinken are going to be trying to do is to get rid of that to work with the Europeans to have a more common position. And there's going to be an expectation that Turkey is going to be more cooperative with Europe and that it should be working to build consensus with European powers. Okay. That might bring in the leverage you're talking about, because that's a lot of money, particularly given the economic situation in Turkey right now.
Yeah, sure. I should just add that. The Michael Carpenter, director of the Biden Center, who is also expected to take a senior position, just a day or two after the U.S. news networks called the election for Biden, he joined this conversation with a few other officials from EU, And it was very interesting. Half of the meeting on Turkey and the conference on transatlantic relations, but Turkey was the main topic, and he was saying that. He was saying that we will, as a U.S. Biden administration, we will create a united front against Erdogan. And he added, we don't want Turkey to go bankrupt. We don't want to demolish the economy there. But, he needs to understand that there is a punishment and, you know, there's a carrot and stick. And it depends, basically, I am paraphrasing. We did this a long piece on this conference. And so, as you suggested, I think we are looking at the Biden administration, who will try to work closer, much closer with EU, even much closer than I think during the Obama era, because after Trump, people went through big trauma. And they understand each other's value, I think, and they'll be working more closely. And I mean, it will be really tough for Erdogan to play these different EU countries against each other, since we will see this Biden administration asserting itself in terms of closing the ranks with the EU against Erdogan.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the message that is coming, from Blinken, who will be Secretary of State, that the key difference is that we will not have personality-driven foreign policy. The last 4 years, it wasn't only the personality of Donald Trump that was driving U.S. foreign policy. Of course, national interest came into play. But let's just say his ego got in the way a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that Angela Merkel, Macron, everybody else in Europe is overjoyed that they're going to have interlocutors. And really this, that at that, one or two levels down from the top, those people will be able to work with American counterparts and know that because someone woke up on the wrong side of the bed, everything gets thrown up in the air.
Yeah.
The chaotic formulation of U.S. foreign policy, so dependent on one personality, that's over. It's going to be much more formulaic. It's going to be much more considered. And of course, it's going to be tougher for any sort of what I call Erdogan's adventurism. Okay. Yeah. And because just think of who that affects. His actions in Cyprus, okay? Cyprus is an EU member. All this stuff saber-rattling towards Greece, Greece is an EU member. He's even had, minor disputes with the Bulgarian about the border. Give me a break. Why are you doing this? What's the profit? And in Libya, he's played it very well because he's been able to get the French and the Italians against each other. That's one of the things I think you're absolutely right. Carpenter and others are saying they're going to be able to make the argument to the Europeans that we're with you, but you have got to be together. You can't be at cross purposes because it's impossible for the United States to be supportive of the EU if you guys internally are crossing swords with each other. And I think that's going to resonate, and it's going to make it easier for the EU to come up with their own consensus policy and work together with the United States so that you have the United States and the European Union working on the same page. You know, again, if I were in the foreign ministry of Turkey right now, I'd be thinking about that and thinking how to face up to the fact that the United States and the European Union are probably going to be working more closely together than they have over the last 4 years, and that a phone call to the White House to speak to the commander-in-chief of the U.S., that's not going to be the way to solve every little problem you come up with.
Okay, well, thank you so much. This is, you know, only the beginning warming period, and I think we will talk more. And as you know, you summarized very well. We are looking at a period next 4 years. You know, more disciplined U.S. team there will be, which is great. I am happy with that. And we will continue to discuss every step here with your valuable articles, as well as whenever we have time, you have time to discuss here. Thanks so much again for your time today. This was very insightful. You have decades-long experience in U.S. government, and this is really helping a lot of people to understand the inner workings of the U.S. government, whether in White House, whether at the State Department. And we will continue to seek your recommendations and your comments. Thank you.
Okay, my pleasure. Take care.
You can follow Ahval News Online podcast series through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and Spreaker. All you need to know about Turkey is here, for your ears, mind, and attention. Thank you for listening to our podcast.